And a very happy 250th birthday to all of you as we celebrate Independence Day for the United States of America this week here on Musings on Golf. I am Kelly Elbin, your host. She is Janice Self, our executive producer. Both of us very proud Americans and excited about this week and the history of our country. 250 years, folks, on July 4th, Independence Day. Personally, it takes me back to July 4th, 1976, the 200th anniversary of the U.S. I can still remember I was a 15-year-old caddy at Burning Tree Club outside of Washington, where my dad was the head professional for many years. And it was a Sunday that year that July 4th fell on. I still remember my dad gathering all the caddies around and saying, you know, good morning, fellas. And he said to them, he said, happy birthday to you. He said, this is a significant day in the history of our country. And, you know, some things stick with you as you go through life. And this coming Saturday will certainly be one that will be long remembered by those of us lucky enough to be on this earth for 250 years of this American experience. So enjoy golf this weekend if you can. I know that I will be playing in a scramble tournament at East Point Country Club here in Palm Beach Gardens. Today, we are going to be talking about the business of sports, the business of golf, and certainly sports having been such a monstrous part of Americana over those over the many years. And the sports professor, Rick Horro, who I've gotten to know a little bit having lived down here more than 20 years, and Rick is a Miami guy and has been on a lot of radio and TV shows here and really all over the internet now. And we were lucky to get Rick on to talk about just the sheer size of the business of sports, the business of golf. And look, all you have to do to appreciate that massive business right now is just watch any of the World Cup matches that are being contested, you know, in sold-out stadiums in three different countries, Canada, Mexico, and the United States, and before the billions of people watching worldwide as we record this on Wednesday, July 1st. I can't wait for tonight. I am hardly a soccer/football guy, but the United States taking on Bosnia and Herzegovina in the round of 32 and the opportunity to advance to the round of 16 played in the United States. This doesn't come around very often. It's a very, very cool experience. And Rick is so well tied in with all the different aspects of the business of the game, the games, the of golf, of what's going on in wagering, what's going on in the agreements that have been in place with the networks that cover the PGA Tour. It's an interesting time. The PGA Tour, through the new commissioner/CEO Brian Rolapp, making the announcement last week that starting in 2028, it'll be a completely different look with two separate tracks, two separate leagues, if you will, really, for the PGA Tour. Now, just as an example, the contracts that the PGA Tour has with the networks right now, they run through 2030. So how will those contracts be modified, changed, if any, as the PGA Tour takes on an entirely different look in 2028? I don't have the answers. I don't think that any of that has really been fleshed out at this point. A lot more details to come, but that's just one aspect. It was most interesting to hear Jordan Spieth talking yesterday at the John Deere Classic in his pre-tournament interview about the wide influence of sports wagering and whether that, you know, how much of an impact that has on golf at the elite level. And his feeling was, yeah, there were people who he felt at the U.S. Open who were, you know, not exactly Wyndham Clark fans, above and beyond maybe what Wyndham did at Oakmont last year, way more than that, that people had money on it. And certainly they can influence in golf by yelling, you know, the timing of things that could be said. So There's just a lot of different aspects to the business of golf. And Rick Haro is a really interesting guy. He has an ongoing or a new agreement with Jack Nicklaus. It's being developed for a golf course project in Stuart, Florida, that will bear his father's name, Ben Haro. And so a lot of influence of his dad. We just cover a lot of bases. You really, really enjoy Rick Haro, and he gets at it right from the start. He's one of those guys, a type A personality, knows his stuff, and he's happy to share it with you. You gotta buckle up and be ready for the ride. So it's a lot of fun. He was just an absolutely terrific guest. What a fun time it was outside of Hartford in Cromwell, Connecticut, over the weekend to see all those fun, crazy Norwegians enjoying. With all the shirts on and the different chants and watching their fellow countryman Victor Hovland, and it took until Monday, and there were so many good shots hit down the stretch on Sunday between he and Scheffler. Great putts, really. You know, they had that little rain delay, and I think that clearly helped Victor Hovland, no different than JJ Spahn at the U.S. Open last year, having that rain delay kind of reset everything. And then it went to the Monday playoff. What an incredible golf shot. The approach that Scottie Scheffler hit again on 18. And son of a gun, it wasn't Victor Hovland who made the putt. Ball just kind of snuck in on that right corner. And then Scheffler just flat out missed it. Hit it too hard, hit it through the break, and it was over. And here's what Victor Hovland had to say about winning for the eighth time on the PGA Tour, and really more importantly, in summing up, full weekend of golf for the players and the spectators.
It was amazing. You know, obviously, the home crowd was rooting for Scotty. He's the best player in the world. We're in the United States of America. That goes. That's just kind of how it goes. But I thought it was super exciting, and the crowds were super respectful. And it just really motivated me to play better. And obviously with some Norwegian jerseys out there, brought the vibes. And I think, the American crowds thought it was cool as well. I thought it made the event a lot, more enjoyable, I think. So yeah, it was just a blast to play at a great golf tournament, a great golf course in front of great fans. And, yeah, it was an absolute blast.
Oh, I love hearing that. And it's great to have Victor Hovland back in the winner's circle. Yeah, he was on the Ryder Cup team last year for Europe, but he's had some down times of late. He's worked on his game quite a bit, and he's back. And that's good for the game. And remember to like us, subscribe to us, to Musings on Golf on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get and listen to your podcast. Just before we get to Rick Haro, you'll hear from our friends at William & Harry Golf about a brand new product that they are bringing to market, and also from our friends at the Friars Golf Club. Then it's on to the sports professor, Rick Haro. Introducing the William & Harry Weekender Duffel Bag, a refined expression of luxury travel, handcrafted from premium full-grain calfskin leather that patinas beautifully over time. Spacious enough for your club essentials, weekend getaways, or business travel, this timeless bag features reinforced leather handles, an adjustable shoulder strap, polished hardware, and a durable build designed for years of use. Whether carried through the airport, the clubhouse, or the city, the William & Harry Weekender delivers understated luxury with every trip. And now for a limited time, it's only $385. So visit williamandharry.com and purchase yours today. Is your golf life stuck in a bunker of country club hassles? Tired of the wait lists and the six-figure initiation fees? Well, at the Friars Golf Club, we take care of all of the hard work. Planning exclusive trips and unforgettable rounds on top-rated courses, so all you have to do is show up, have fun, and make lifelong friendships on the first tee, the 19th hole, and far beyond. Our terrific 2026 lineup includes international destinations like Dubai and Scandinavia, plus top domestic resorts such as Sand Valley and Black Desert, and access to some great private clubs. Join the Friars Golf Club today. email us at info@thefriars.com, the word musings in the subject line, to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. We invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience with the Friars Golf Club. From the rapid growth of online gambling to the continued movement of NFL games to streaming services, the business of sports is ever-changing, and golf is certainly no different. Our special guest has made it his career to stay abreast of and impact the business of sports. In fact, he has pioneered the business of sports since 1987 by setting the standard for thought leadership and sports business analysis. He is the CEO of Haro Sports Ventures, and more to the point, he is the sports professor. Hey, Rick Haro, so pleased to welcome you to Musings on Golf. I hope you're doing well.
Well, Kelly, this is the time where I'm selling my damn book, okay? So there are many of them. Sport Business Handbook. I did about 115 business leaders who gave advice on how to succeed in the business and their world, you know, including some of our buddies in the golf business, Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, obviously, you know, your buddy Steranko is in the middle of this too. Although
Joe Steranko, right?
Yeah, I had a problem with that because Joe only is capable of communicating in one syllable words. So we had to kind of move that along a little bit. Hopefully he hears this. Good buddy. Great guy, obviously.
Yeah.
But the point is the business 50 years ago, celebrated 50 years of sports business. The only way you could be called a sports agent, lawyer, dealmaker was if you had some guy who found a poor athlete that called him a sports lawyer dealmaker. Now it's a $2.6 trillion business. My first books talked about $1.3 trillion. Then Davos had an economic retreat analysis last 2 weeks ago, and they came up with a $2.6 trillion number. So I have to put masking tape over all my books and change the number to doubling it, like they're doing, by the way. You didn't ask this, but it's your show. It's my agenda.
I love it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I just came back from six World Cup games, and of course FIFA imposed a no sponsorship standard on all the major stadiums. So I'm standing there doing a segment with Fox and Reuters and all at Lumen Field. I'm looking up Lumen Field in Seattle. They paid $130 million for infrastructure, transportation, alike, and they didn't include masking tape. So you see the big Lumen up there, and then some joker came up and put Lumen masking tape, but you could still see Lumen sticking through there. And the same thing, by the way, with Levi's in San Fran and SoFi in LA, and of course Hard Rock down here.
What about a shaving cream over the Gillette Stadium? Do you see that?
Yeah. No, listen, all of that stuff is really interesting. And FIFA, on the one hand, is a very high leverage organization. They generate, if you believe their numbers, about $30 billion in total economic impact in the 15 venues in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. And they make $13 billion. They don't like to talk about that, but they're tripling the investment. And at the end of the day, they have a lot of leverage where if the mayors of these cities were required to dance on the top of a table in their underwear, they would all rush to the top of that table.
The excitement and the passion for the World Cup in this country, obviously, with when we're recording this on Tuesday, June 23rd, the U.S. has won its first two matches. So by the time we post this a week from today, you know, let's hope they're 3-0 and they've already advanced to the round of 32. But Rick, are the numbers really good in terms of the TV numbers? The stadiums look packed.
Well, the stadiums are packed, and I can attest to that because I've been at, you know, many of those packed stadiums and found it very difficult to get tickets. Let's look at this in the context of 104 independent Super Bowls with the economic impact that's just like that. Each of the cities have put out their own studies, and remarkably, they're kind of down in the middle. You can always disagree with economic impact numbers, whether it's Ryder Cup or any other kind of sporting event, but you can't really dispute the fact did you have basically 6 million people coming in from out of town, out of the country, and 3 billion watching the finals on the World Cup in 3 weeks. And also, the surveys say that about 90% of the visitors around North America intend to come back, unless, of course, Americans screw it up because they behave like Americans. But at the end of the day, this is one of those things where you think about the mega sporting events, it justifies the facilities. We get back into, you know, the four majors we've got in your sport and the Ryder Cup, which of course is preeminent. And the real key is, how do you attract and maintain and retain out-of-town visitors? That's where sports and business really does intersect.
I want to talk about the major announcement that's come out from the PGA Tour, which really redefines the competitive model starting in 2028 in a minute. But we are just coming off of the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills, Rick. In general, can you give me a sense of the four major championships, Augusta National Golf Club with the Masters, the R&A with the Open Championship, the PGA of America with the PGA Championship, and the USGA with the U.S. Open? Are those still, for advertisers, for the networks, are those still desirable products? And are they well received by the public? Is there a growing number of people watching those events?
Yeah. And frankly, it's now, as you know, more of a kind of a storytelling kind of thing. Mark Lazarus, a good friend, he was with Turner and then his own company. And of course, he was a president of NBC Sports for a long time. He spun off Versant Media, which is a conglomerate that includes the Golf Channel now. So he understands golf. And I still am in possession of one of his wedges that he inadvertently left in my bag. And I'm holding it as leverage for our next programming opportunity discussion. But more important to you is that he comes from the Dick Ebersole School of Storytelling. And that's really important. You know, you don't have to like the way Wyndham Clark necessarily is so consistent, because it's not as dramatic as like Bryson blowing up. But you do like his story, and you like the way he withstood all of the New York heckling, not the Rory McIlroy heckling, but the Shinnecock heckling. And all of these are stories. So the more we have golfers who have significant stories to tell, which is everybody, the better off for the sport.
I worked at the PGA of America for Joe Steranko, who you mentioned earlier, who, again, it sounds like Joe needs to pony up with a couple of bets, but that's
Joe and I need to have a conversation.
That's what it is. That's a sidebar. when the U.S., there obviously were issues, to say the least, with the Ryder Cup at Bethpage. Rick, the U.S. has struggled. The Europeans simply have kind of owned the Ryder Cup. Just from a television standpoint, on the American side, does it hurt the interest in the Ryder Cup when the Europeans are kind of dominating, at least in control of it?
Well, the Sunday ratings certainly are impacted, because let's remember that, you know, the NBC franchise sustains, but yet you have all of the AFC, NFC, heart of the schedule, Sunday football that is against it. And if you're down by, let's say, 7 points with only 12 at stake on the Sunday, the question is, what time do you clinch? And if it's at 1 o'clock, then it's difficult to care about the last 5 or 6 hours. That's a smaller issue. The bigger issue is, do we have competitive advantage and sustaining? A great storyline to have every American and every European / non-American try to beat the hell out of each other rhetorically. They're best of friends. You know, I was riding back, luckily, with Ricky Fowler a few Ryder Cups ago when it was in Rome, remember? And I came back on the same flight back to Orlando, I think, probably, or Miami, whichever one it was. But at the end of the day, it was interesting, because you had Luke Donald in the same flight. And, you know, we're supposed to hate each other because he was the captain of the other team. No, there's no hatred. These guys, you know, love each other. They play with each other. This is just another way to evoke their inner basketball playground trash talking. And it's good for golf, by the way, because I don't care what anybody says. But, you know, Bryson trash talking everybody and everybody kind of not liking him. And then at the drop of a hat, agents get a hold of him and say, you know, you got to be more human. And then look at the performances he's had at the Open, where he signs autographs and he smiles at everybody, hugs everybody. The golfers, like everybody else being covered, need to be human, because they are.
You mentioned about good for golf. The PGA Tour has announced that its competitive model, Rick Haro, will be completely overhauled starting in 2028. with a two-track system. It had kind of been hinted, but now it is formalized that you'll have a champions track, 23 to 24 events, each worth $20 million, 120 player fields, and I'm presuming there'll be cuts for each of those fields. You'll have then a challenger track with 20 of those players advancing to the track one in the following season. Is that good for golf, for the PGA Tour, and for people who follow it?
I think change is good for golf. And anytime you have something like this, I remember going through the NASCAR playoffs with those folks that I was advising, and the same thing early with the FedEx Cup. And every cynic is going to find something wrong with a specific tinker until you get it all right, and it, you know, none of the noise matters anymore. So it is good for golf. But second, more important, I think, is that good for Brian Rolopp. There was a lot of discussion for Brian, and I know him and know, you know, his credibility as I work with the NFL for many years. And Brian is one of those folks who is a change agent. He grew up in, shaped the NFL digital perspective, which of course is very important. But there were not grumblings, but it was, all right, you've been on the job, what, 2 weeks now, so what have you done lately? And at the end of the day, this futures committee and the owners, the big meeting that they just had, there was a lot of pressure to produce something. And this is not just one of those do anything. This was one of those very well-studied input from the players. And it's too early to comment on the specifics yet, but it is very timely to comment on the fact that golf is moving along. And by the way, the shadows of LIV, which I know Scott O'Neill, and I loved what he did at MSG. And let's remember, he was a, quote, mainstream sports guy. He worked with all of the folks with the Devils and the Flyers and all of the teams in the Northeast, and he was there to save golf. Well, you know, if you get a $500 million plug pulled and you say you've got 2 days to raise that money, what's he going to do? And so my sense is that LIV is materially impacted, goes away, and then this role that Rolopp has rolled out now can kind of roll into the greater good.
Well played on all the roles. Why didn't LIV Golf work?
Well, because it depends on whose accountability and who judged success. You know, I think the Saudis would argue for those 2 or 3 years in terms of attracting attention as the worldwide disruptor for all sports, and allowed them to survey the field and understand that money is going to disrupt and buy happiness. And then they go on, by the way, take a look at it. They're attempting to do some of the same stuff in tennis. They are doing the same stuff in esport. They have the World Cup in 8 years. So on and on and on. This was a bridge to something else. And when you have 90% of the budget underwritten by somebody, and that somebody has the ability to pivot and go in another direction, I'd be a little worried about being the CEO of that organization. Now, Greg was in the right place at the right time because, you know, give Greg Norman credit. Some people shouldn't, but he should get credit as someone who was pestering Fox 15 years ago to try to get the same thing done. And everybody said, it ain't going to happen. Well, it happened similar to what he wanted to do. And he probably deserved was installed as the guy who would drive it. And he drove it, and people were taking the competition and the stealing of players out on him. It's easy to take it out on him because his personality allows such. But at the end of the day, you got to give him credit, and you got to give maybe Scott O'Neill some credit for taking a graceful, you know, wind down and integrating it. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that's probably the way it ought to happen.
The sports professor, Rick Caro, joining us here on Musings on Golf. Rick, you were undergrad at Northwestern University, Harvard Law School. What inspired you? I know you're kind of a sports guy by nature. You grew up in Miami, but what inspired you to make that your career and get to the level where you've achieved over the years?
Long story. I'll do the highlights because it is emotional. So in 65, 66, my first exposure to golf was at the foot of my dad watching Jack Nicklaus win his first Masters. And then a year later, I was at Mount Sinai Hospital in Miami, where we were at about the same time, and he gave me a set of expansion Miami Dolphin tickets to begin to play 6 months later and said, we're going to every game. Well, he had melanoma and he didn't make it. And one of the things that happened was we said, is Jack going to win his second major in a row or second Masters? And he said, yeah, I think so. Why not? But, you know, you live your life like a Jack Nicklaus would and does. And the combination of the Dolphins and I wanted to do something in Miami. I wanted to do something in sports. And then it was easy after high school because the Dolphins were perfect, and you read the memo that said they would never lose another game. Well, they didn't read that damn memo, but somebody did. And so after Northwestern undergrad, Harvard Law came back and wanted to do sports. I decided that sports law would be the business, along with Harvard Law. Decided to do a thesis on hockey fighting at Harvard Law because everybody realizes if you grew up in Miami at that time, where fighting is not a normal way that sports and hockey is played, although it is, everybody accepts it everywhere else. And the criminal law professor said, great topic. There is no such thing as sports law, and we don't teach it at Harvard anyway. Well, that's all I needed to hear. And I said, hey, listen, old man, I'm going to play you in squash. I've never played it. It's a vegetable. But if you win, I'm going to shut up and do some boring topic, and that's be the end of me for you. If I win, you're going to write me a hall pass for Schaefer Stadium at that point, and TD Garden at the Garden, and Fenway, and everywhere else. And I'm going to do a survey series. We're going to write a book. We're going to do a bill. And the interesting sidelight is that I got 5 months to rehearse. And my coach at that time, because he was an undergrad and first year student at Harvard Law, was Don Roberts, who is the Chief Justice. As it turns out, he was my coach who shepherded me to victory against this old criminal law professor, who, by the way, was 83 years old. That's okay. It doesn't really matter. So John is now a contemporary. He became my roommate. And if I'm the father of sports law in some context, he's the illegitimate grandfather. So, you know, short-circuited to Miami, coming back, very important, South Florida heat, never thought it would happen. 18 steps up, 17 back. There's a long story about that. It's in all the books. And that became easier for than the Marlins, than the Panthers. And now look at us. I mean, we are a 7 million person market broadly defined, and no one ever said they were ever against anything. Everybody was at the ribbon cutting for the Heat trophy celebration and the Panthers and the two Marlins, but that's geographically impossible. But, you know, you sit back and you think with pride about what happens. And as a sidelight, the sports business is now $2.6 trillion, so it's a lot easier to be part of it.
And the big trade that that Mr. Riley just pulled off to get Giannis is one more feather in his cap and one more piece of interest for South Florida fans, right?
Well, but look at it this way. We have a Zito pulled off Kachuk trade on the hockey side. You've got the Heat being a place where everybody wants to go. You've got the Marlins, whether we believe in a fire sale after becoming a trustee of a franchise, net-net, whether you like Bruce Sherman or not, they have two World Series championships. And, of course, the Dolphins, by the way, here's the treat, and you can replay this next year, undefeated this season and Super Bowl. What do you think of that? What? What? No, that ain't happening. But, you know, hope springs eternal. And the beauty of Dolphin football is you know, you never know. Oh, by the way, the Hurricanes, the best team money could buy. You know, back in the 80s, we did it under the table. Now we do it over the table. But it's the same table.
Right?
It's the same table.
Rick Horro, you are a terrific guest. Tell you what, right now, we'll take a short break to hear from our friends at William & Harry Golf. Then we'll be back for more of our conversation. Introducing the William & Harry Weekender Duffel Bag, a refined expression of luxury travel, handcrafted from premium full-grain calfskin leather that patinas beautifully over time. Spacious enough for your club essentials, weekend getaways, or business travel, this timeless bag features reinforced leather handles, an adjustable shoulder strap, polished hardware, and a durable build designed for years of use. Whether carried through the airport, the clubhouse, or the city, the William & Harry Weekender delivers understated luxury with every trip. And now for a limited time, It's only $385. So visit WilliamAndHarry.com and purchase yours today. The massive change of through name, image, and likeness. And all of, and Rick, all of the gambling that's done on, I mean, you can gamble on what's going to be at the next pitch. It's going to be a ball or a strike. I mean, it's so pervasive. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I do know it's got to be an incredible amount of money poured into our country through sports gambling. And certainly, as we said with the kid at Texas Tech, that situation with him, and now going into the NFL supplemental draft. Yeah, there's so many moving parts going on in that part of the business.
Well, let me just put it this way from the NFL perspective, since I was kind of an insider on all the stadium stuff. In the late teens, 2016, 17, basically before the Supreme Court ruling that made a lot of this legal, the massive floodgates were open. The NFL retained a number of top-flight lobbyists to make sure that Congress would not allow gambling, because everybody was so excited about protecting the integrity of the game, Supreme Court decision, the shift. I'm not saying the NFL's opportunist. I'm just saying factually, you know, 3 years later, they have seven independent deals, FanDuel, DraftKings, everybody else. Everybody focuses on gambling. Where do you draw the line? Then President Emmert of the NCAA says, well, student athletes are going to be paid. That's inevitable. And I'm going to write you a memo about a year and a half from now, and we're going to describe it and wait for the memo. Well, crickets. And the Supreme Court decided to defer to the other courts to allow the structure for the Wild Wild West as far as college gambling is concerned. And you do it the right way. The teams, obviously, that are at the top of the playoff chart in basketball, in football, and other sports are the ones with the highest NIL program. And the ones with the outspoken coaches, and all the other coaches say, oh, no, no, this is terrible. This isn't good. A week later, they're all doing the same thing. And so at the end of the day, I'm excited about the University of Miami. Didn't go there, do a lot of teaching there. But look at the money they're spending. They're buying themselves a perpetual national championship contender. Good for them.
Is that good for the athletic department of the university? Do the funds just continue to be there? Or are those major concerns of different sports needing to be cut and so forth?
Well, it's up to each athletic department to take the grace of NIL God that's coming to football and basketball and make sure it's distributed to golf and swimming and to, you know, a lot of schools, polo, which is amazing, and volleyball. You got 23 sports that many athletic directors need to distribute evenly or at least on a pro rata basis. And the important thing is that they will continue to do it both on men's and women's side. That's the beauty of all of this new money in sports.
What about for golf? Will we continue to see more of the odds that are shown before or during every event? Is that going to be more prevalent for what you see on an ongoing basis, just a Monday through Wednesday on the Golf Channel and then on the 4 days of tournaments?
Well, my new partnership with Jack Nicklaus, which is interesting, and you know, I told you the initial story, then I worked for Jack for a while. We don't have enough time today to tell you how that went, but it went well enough where Jack has become, you know, a good personal friend. And one of the things that we did when I became a trustee of the First Tee program, which is huge, was to have lunch with him and say, you know, my first act with you on this, Rick, is to build a redesign at the shores of North River in Stuart, Florida. We're going to take a par 66 and redo it as a quasi-executive course. And he's doing it on behalf of my dad. So it's a Ben Haro project. And he's throwing the money in. And he's unbelievable. And Jack, you know, has become a friend. So he's now part of this whole thought leadership world. And Stevie and Jackie and the whole family will be involved in monthly thought leadership events, which I want you to kind of be involved in as well. It's cool because Jack's mandate is we've got to empower kids, just like RBI in baseball, just like Pop Warner in football. And the golf piece, you don't have to be a good golfer, but you ought to be a good human. And we need to make sure that NIL is done right. The training of kids is done right, both on and off the golf course. And so the bottom line is, people like Jack are now interested to make sure that athletic directors in high school and colleges are stewarding the golf industry the way it ought to be to make sure there are guardrails.
Yeah, and are those guardrails, are they up when it comes to people who are gambling on golf? Well, they are. Is golf in a good spot there where are people going to be yelling at players that they may have bet on or bet against because it may affect the outcome of their bet when they're on site at an event?
Well, first, the regulations will apply to everybody. Second, the difficulty in golf. I don't remember, certainly I have some personal experience with some people you know, but also, when have we ever gone into a social golf match where money hasn't exchanged hands? Well, in theory. In theory. Yeah. And so it's a situation where the gambling piece of golf has been ingrained for a number of years and will continue to be. And you just got to be careful as to how you impose those guardrails.
Hey, a couple more questions before we let you go. As I mentioned at the outset, Rick Carl, so many more NFL games are going from broadcast to streaming. Is that certainly looks like it's going to continue that way. Will we see a day, Rick, where the 1 o'clock slate of games that's always been on CBS, Fox, it was, you know, back in the day on NBC, is it possible those 1 o'clock games are now on Netflix?
Yeah, well, look, streaming has become so valuable irrespective of content. I mean, the standards are so low. You have a podcast, I have a podcast. That's all you need to say. And so at the end of the day, the key will be to avoid congressional regulation that will kill it. The sustaining bedrock, I think, all the Sunday games, Sunday night games, Monday night will be Thanksgiving. Most of them will be continually there. Now, the Friday afternoon bonanza, Christmas Wednesday bonanza, one game Thursday, Thanksgiving bonanza. So there will be a chip away, but the chip away will be new incremental revenue that the players will share and the teams will share. And if they're bright, they'll allocate a certain amount to a youth development fund, a stadium development fund, and all of that. So the public sector can see some of those dollars going directly to the cost centers that mean a lot.
What's the value right now of professional golf relative to the NFL? Are what guys are making on tour, is that does that work based on the number of people who are watching? Certainly, Pat Mahomes making $50 million a year because the NFL is so big. Is Rory McIlroy worth what he's making? In other words, is Scottie Scheffler worth what he's making?
Apples and bananas. On the one hand, these are individuals who can command a moment in the sun that is much different than Mahomes. You like him or not, he's a superstar, but he's one of 22 players on the field at any given time. When Scottie Scheffler does one of his amazing back nines, 90% less of that, but some significant number is devoted to him. Same thing in tennis. So, and the other big difference too is this is a independent contractor world. So, they got their own expenses, they've got corporations. The Mahomes, not only is he getting a guarantee, which these golfers don't get in theory, but he has a team and another entity that takes care of all of that.
Rick, we wrap up our show every time, or virtually every time, asking about who would be three people who you play in a dream foursome. And you've mentioned your father several times earlier, and I would imagine it. And these would be people, whether they're still with us or they're deceased. Right. I would imagine your dad would be one of those. Who would be the other two you'd play in a dream foursome, and where would you go play?
Wow. Can I shape it so I could beat them? Is that okay?
It is totally. It's in your court. The ball is in your hand.
Wow. All right. Well,
I can beat them. I love it. Yeah. You're not too competitive, are you?
No, clearly not. And this is good because when we prepared, and by the way, you're brilliant as far as preparation. So this is great. But I would say this is kind of interesting. So it's my dad. It is Jack Nicklaus. And it is Maurice Ferre, who was the mayor of Miami, whose vision was let's get basketball. I don't care that you're throwing, you're getting darts and arrows thrown at you. Well, all right, let's do this. Maurice Ferre on the front nine, and Florida, because he can't play. Florida Governor, former Florida Governor Bob Graham on the back nine, because both of them were saying, "You're the sports guy now in Florida. You just got out of law school. You're not over your head politically, but it's such a cesspool. I got your back." So it's a back nine, front nine, but my dad is the guy that's going to ride with me, and Jack is going to carry my goddamn bag.
Where would you go play? And then second of all, tell me a little bit more about your dad. I want to know what made your dad special.
Well, yeah. Okay. That's good. I would probably play at, you could say Kohler, or you could say Pebble Beach. I would say St. Andrews, because I have been there and played there a lot. I actually had Fox rent me a kilt, and I did some segments on the kilt, and somebody got a hold of it from the Scottish Tourist Bureau and said, "If we rent you a kilt, will you wear it on Wednesday?" So we're taping this. I know we will have aired it after, but Scotland plays Brazil in game three in the early round, and I'm going to be there with a kilt. No discussion about what's under the kilt, but I am going to be.
Please.
No, but we're wearing the kilt. So I emulated my dad, and obviously passed too soon, but he was a Philadelphia lawyer, was with a corporate law firm, and maybe it's in the genes. He said, I ain't doing this anymore. I want to be entrepreneurial. We came down to Miami and started a company called Miami Ventilated Awnings, which was a novel concept that which you could have trademarked and patented. It's the roll-up shutters where if there's a hurricane, you bring them down. Well, now everybody has them, but in 1954, 55, 56, nobody had them. And so I was born in 55, and for 10 years, he was the awning guy. Ironically, first sports sponsorship ever. He did a minor league baseball game that the CBS affiliate in Miami did. And here's my sports director who passed before he turned 100, Bernie Rosen, at the CBS affiliate in Miami, who said, "Your dad started all this and now you're doing it again." I didn't realize that. So the synergy was amazing. And I think there is a gene that everybody will find as they do more DNA testing that says, screw traditional practice of law, Gene, and do what you want to do.
All right, let's close with this. You have your own podcast, as you mentioned earlier, On the Record. Where can people find that? And also, any kind of shameless plugs you want to have in terms of people having the opportunity to have you speak to them? Where do they go? Where do they learn more?
Well, the shameless plug is that I'm doing a lot of different things, kind of multi-purposing with it, with interviews, kind of like what you do, but the On the Record is now morphing into a show called Legends, and it was Icons, and the debut will be with Gray Media, but also with Roku and DirecTV in the middle of July, and the first one of them will be a one-on-one with Jack Nicklaus, which will be important, and we're doing that on a regular basis because I enjoy it, kind of like what you do, and horrorsports.com is the website, and if you act quickly, I will assign my bet collection that Joe Steranko owes me, and you can go out and try to find him. That is my offer to you.
It is a fantastic way to close it. He is the sports professor, Rick Cora. Hey, Rick, thank you so much for your time, your thoughts. This has been great.
Kelly, you're great. Thank you, man.
What an interview that was. We we thank the sports professor, Rick Cora, not only for his passion, but his knowledge. And I can't wait to tee it up with him soon here in Palm Beach Gardens. As we close, happy 4th of July to all of you. Enjoy the 250th anniversary birthday of our great country. And we'll see you next week on Musings on Golf.